Predators season recap show, ESPN 102.5 and 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Pete Weber, Hal Gill here with you tonight as we're going to look back on this season and, of course, talk to the Predators general manager David Poile, as well as head coach John Hines. And they had their end of season press conferences today. But first, Pete, Hal, how are we doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm staying up very, very late. And I'm wondering, you know, what happens? Are there any goaltenders in that Edmonton-Calgary series?
It's crazy. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that.
Not since the 80s for me, I got to tell you.
It is unreal. But, yeah, I'm still recovering from the Preds being out, but I'm doing okay. I appreciate your concern, thoughts and prayers. I'm doing okay.
We are concerned, and look, I think a lot of people are recovering, including our first guest of the evening. I think we have the connection working, but let's say hello to Predators general manager David Poile, who is on the line with us. David, good evening. How you doing?
I am doing good, guys. Good to talk to everybody.
Yeah, listen, you know, questions this afternoon wasn't enough for you, so we figured we'd ask you a few more.
Comes with the territory. I totally understand. I'm glad you're interested. That's the most important thing.
Exactly. And that's where I want to start, because you've been through every postseason press conference the Nashville Predators have ever had. And as you and Pete and Hal and myself all know, there's only one team that's going to enjoy that every year, and that's whoever wins the Stanley Cup. But I thought today was very honest, and you were very honest, and you used the phrase that every team is constantly having to rebuild. From watching the league change 25 years ago when the Predators first started to seeing it now, how hard is it to keep up with that and how things are constantly changing and you do have to rebuild, so to speak, year after year?
Well, I did say that at the press conference, and I mean it, because, you know, we talked last year and I kind of coined the phrase of competitive rebuild, and that kind of, I don't think people either quite accepted it or understood it. But, you know, the prime example is Tampa Bay's won the Cup the last 2 years, and even last year when they won the Cup, they have six new players. So, you know, from that standpoint, you're always looking to make your team better, or guys are leaving. We're in a salary cap age right now where, you know, for some teams it's hard to keep their team together. And there's a variety of reasons of why you're always on the rebuild. And as you said on the opening, I mean, at the end of the year, there's only one team that's really happy because they've won that last game of the season. For all others, we fell short. And, I was really happy with a lot of things this year. I thought we made good progress, but I want to make sure that all our fans know this. By no means are we satisfied. It's just a start going in the right direction.
David, from your preseason expectations, were they essentially met?
Yeah, actually, I would say yes, Pete, because, you know, I hope people don't think we set the bar too low when I say our goal was to make the playoffs. But I say that coming off a year where we did make the playoffs, but there was a lot of question marks. And from off ice, our coaching staff, and, you know, where they stood more long-term with the club, there was a fair amount of criticism that our best players were not our best players. And I don't think there was a great belief in our team or our plan. And that got to sort of double down, if you will, with trading of Ryan Ellis and Victor Arvidsson, very good and very popular players. We also lost Cali Yarncroft in the expansion draft. So there was a lot of things that took place both on and off the ice last year that probably, with all, you know, fairness to everybody, that, you know, probably a lot of question marks for fans and management alike. But for me, our coaches did a fantastic job. I mean, whether it worked during the summer or training camp or their individual meetings with players, starting with our best players. And what did we get from our best players? We got the transition from Pekka Rinne to Saros. Saros is one of the three finalists for the best goalie in the league, the Vezina Award. From our captain and best player, Roman Josi is probably going to win the Norris Trophy for the best defenseman in the league. For our top forwards, we got Matt Duchene and Well, Forsberg scoring over 40 goals for the first time in franchise history for anybody scoring 40 goals. We got younger players like Trennan and Tanner Jeannot that really had their best years, and Tanner Jeannot got his name mentioned in the Calder for the best rookie in the league and scored 24 goals. So, yes, there was a lot of good thing, and the culmination of that team-wise is that we made the playoffs. But as we saw against Colorado, that we were outmatched, and we have a long ways to go. So happy that we made progress, but certainly not satisfied.
David, when you look at a rebuild or a transition, however you want to phrase it, you're looking at young guys. And I was real impressed with the young guys, certainly Tanner Jeannot, Yakov Trennan. You know, Tomasino seems like he's coming around. Fabro, Carrier, there's a lot of young talent on the team. And I look at it as that's the first year quite some time where you've had an 82-game season. So what do you think of their progress, and what would you tell those guys going forward? And are you happy with what they've done, and, you know, basically in their first year, full year in the NHL?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for the most part, most of our players lived up to our expectations. A lot of guys had career years. You know, for these younger guys, I believe we led the NHL in rookies in terms of goals and points. So that's certainly a barometer to be judged in a positive way. But having said that, what happened in the last two seasons because of COVID, we've had partial seasons of, 50, 56 games. And this was the first time in 3 years that anybody, and for some of these kids, have never played 82 games in a season. And it showed up at the most crucial time in the last 20 games of the season. You could make a case that our goals against, goaltending a little bit maybe wasn't as strong as it was for the first three quarters of the year. The goal scoring certainly was kept up by Duchesne and Forsberg, but we kind of went dry with our secondary scoring. And I think just a lot of players had a tougher time at the end of the season. So that's youth to a certain extent. That's the consistency that you need for the full 82-game schedule. And then we got to the playoffs. You know, we were, as I said earlier, we were a little bit overmatched. But all in all, I think the potential is there. Now, I can clearly probably repeat what you said, Hal, in terms of the names. I think, Tanner Jeannot has got a huge future in terms of being a power forward that certainly can move up in the lineup. I think Phil Tomasino got 30 points on probably out of 12 forwards, maybe the 10th or 11th amount of ice. I mean, you know, again, I think a year wiser, bigger, stronger, that type of thing. I think he can move up in the lineup. I certainly would forecast him to be a top two line player for us in the not too distant future. And, you know, Trennan's a young player, and some other guys, a player like Tolvin, and, you know, probably didn't have the season that either we or he was looking for. But I think as a young player, and, you know, having a good off season, getting a little bit more confidence and consistency, if you will, there are reasons why this team could certainly get better. And in addition to that, I mean, we have some shortcomings and we have some holes in our lineup, and we'll have some changes. And, you know, obviously what we were able to accomplish in the offseason by free agency, by trades, is going to make a big difference in terms of how far we can get in this game plan to move up to be a contender for the Stanley Cup.
We're talking to Predators general manager David Poile. He's on the line with us here on the Recap Show. And you know, every week in talking to us on Darren Donick and Chase, I was always the one that would ask you about Philip Forsberg. But I want to talk about some of the other free agents that you have on your club. Nick Cousins and Matt Benning, Ben Harper. You've got some restricted guys in Cunnan, Trennan, Luff, Lauzon. Obviously, Forsberg is the focus, and you have to get that taken care of. But what do you think from some of those other players? You know, could we see some of them back, or do you feel like that you might be looking at new blood somewhere?
We're going to make some changes. Again, we're still fresh off of the end of the season, and we've done the player interviews. I've met with the coaches. I think we got a basis of our thought process, but I'm going to give everybody a little bit of a break here, say, you know, next week, and let everybody digest and think about the season and the players and all of our discussions. Then we'll get back at it with our scouts. We had a pro meeting today. We're going to have one next week. We're getting ready for the draft. So there's a lot of things up in there. But to specifically answer your questions, not everybody will be back, and we will be making some changes. Whether we can do that from within or a promotion from within, that would be my first choice. But whether we make a trade or for sure whether we get into some kind of a free agency. So all those things are on the table, and all those things are going to be necessary if we're going to get better. But we certainly can't stay with the same lineup, in my opinion, if we're really trying to get better.
David, how much were things hampered? I mean, a lot of things were hampered by COVID, to be frank, but how that disrupted player development at the lower levels. I mean, minor pro, as you go to junior hockey and so on, guys just could not get in full seasons at an age where they could really have used that.
No, that's a terrific point. And, you know, obviously not just affecting us, but everybody else. You were in a situation where you couldn't travel as much, so you couldn't integrate, for example, your development people with your younger players, whether it be in junior or college or specifically, again, in Milwaukee. So there was a lot of things that were set back. As I mentioned earlier, the number of games that we played in the last couple of seasons was like 30 games less than you usually play. So, this is the closest we got to being normal. But even in this season, you know, games were canceled at the beginning or rescheduled, and the schedule got very hard for us and everybody else near the end of the season. We had that Olympic break that was going to happen, and the Olympics was called off. So we ended up filling in a couple of games, but we played like 7 or 8 games in February. We traditionally played 13 or 14 games. So it wasn't quite normal, but we're getting there. And if I had my wishes, I'm sure I speak for everybody, is that let's get the schedule back to normal. And I just think that everybody will get into that routine where we can play the 82 games on a more consistent basis.
David, I feel like, you know, from my time here in Nashville and watching what the organization and the fan base has gone through, of course, everyone is upset. You're upset. The team is upset. No one wants to lose in the first round. But going through what everyone knew was a rebuild and a competitive transition, and now you have the fan base is so upset. Do you see the change? This is a hockey town. I feel like a hockey market, a big hockey market, they get upset when you lose. There's no excuses, right? And you just can't have a good team that's competitive. This town wants to win. Have you seen that change, or is that just a disappointment of losing?
No, I think, again, that's the good and the bad news that comes with, I guess, my job, John Hines' job, is that it's the both the good and the bad. I would say, and I've mentioned this when we sort of went to one-on-one interviews with a few of the press people who were asking, you know, questions about the state of our, franchise, or our fans or what have you. And I said, I think our fans are great. I think, all due honesty, that we have to own up to the fact that, in the playoffs in the Colorado games, we didn't give them a lot to cheer about. But, and again, like 10 years ago, maybe 2 days after the hockey season, we would be irrelevant. And I think it's really good that people care this much about the game, whether it be, the media people on the radio or print, and fans are offering up their opinion. I mean, that's the sign that we people care about the Predators and want them to do the best they can. So it's kind of taking the good good with the bad. But all in all, I feel good about the team, happy and proud of what we accomplished and the progress we made in a season that really, as a lot of people thought, really could have gone a different way. And but again, for the second time, I'm by no means am I saying that we're satisfied, and I know we still have a long way to go, and that was pointed out and stayed by how good Colorado was against us, and it wasn't close. So all the players know that in individual meetings, and then a meeting that I had with the team at the end of the season, they know where we stand, they know what the expectations are. I think the players have a good belief in what they did accomplish this year and what potential that we what we have. And as John said, that he's kind of using the phrase that he needs everybody to be, not reinvent themselves to be a ton better, but got to find a way to be 1 or 2% better.
Well, David, again, we appreciate your time tonight. And, you know, for us here at the game, you coming on with Darren and Willie and myself every week, whether it's good or bad or somewhere in between, it's always appreciated. And listen, I'll call you in a couple of weeks just to ask you about Philip Forsberg, just to keep up with it. So, you know, I don't want you, to.
I would be so happy if we could sign Philip. I think you all know that. And I think what I should do is, as soon as I get that done, I might tell the owner, but I think you should be the next call, Chase. So maybe you should. Why don't you help me a little bit? Why don't you call Philip and see if you can get this off the line?
I'll get on it. I'll get on it right now. Be like, Phil, you love Nashville. Come on. You got to stay here. So, but in all seriousness, thank you again. And we'll do it again soon.
Hey, thank you, guys. Have a good offseason. Appreciate it.
Thank you, David. You too.
Absolutely. David Poile, Predators general manager, joining us here on the recap show. And yes, it became a running joke that I Darren and Willie would basically set me up to ask every week. So
it's time for the Forsberg question. Here's
Go ahead, rookie. Go ahead and ask the question. Everyone wants to ask you. It's your job.
Yeah. We'll have John Hines at the bottom of the hour, but we'll come back and talk about some of the things that you just heard from the general manager and also the press conference earlier today. As you listen to the Predators season recap show on ESPN 102.5 and 106.3, the game. Welcome back into the Predators season recap show here on ESPN 102.5 and 106.3, the game. Chase McCabe, Pete Weber, Hal Gill. They, of course, are the voices that you hear every game night here on these airwaves.
As long as COVID doesn't interfere, Chase.
Yes, well, that's true. I mean, this year was we had Max have to fill in a couple times because of COVID. Yep. Or, you know, you both kind of went through that, but hopefully that is all behind us. No score so far between Tampa and Florida about halfway through the first period is underway. So you guys heard David Poile today at the press conference. You heard him just now. And, you know, I mentioned the honesty, and it was, you know, both I thought were very honest conversations. He's just as upset as the fan base. But Hal, you made an excellent point that we finally have a fan base that, you know, gets upset and has become a hockey town. And you've played in Toronto and Boston and, you know, Montreal, you know what those fan bases are.
I know what upset is.
You know what upset is. And so upset is. Even though people are upset, it's in a way a good thing because that means they actually care about the hockey team.
That's what you're looking for is obviously there's always been a passionate fan base. But it's the passion, I feel like, has always been, you know, cheering for a team. But when you're upset about something and you want change and you're like you want things to be better, like you're not just watching it and passionate about when it's happening, but you're invested in it. And I feel like that's where the Preds fan base is right now. And it's harder. And David said that it's a good and a bad thing. It's something that I think, you know, the knee-jerk reactions are what the fans are going to make and the media are going to, like, we need a response right now. David Poile is trying to build something. He has to, and he said it, I take some time off because I'm sure he's emotional and there's players that he was upset with and he's just going to, like, if you said right after the series, he'd probably trade half his team because you weren't good enough and you shouldn't be here anymore, you know, like, but he's got to take a step back, realize what the situation for each player is, realize how are we going to build on this. And he said he's got to make changes. If he wants to win, he's got to make changes. And he knows that he's just got to make the right changes. And that's a tough job. All these fans out there that are upset, they have to put their feet in David Poile's shoes and say, okay, what do I do about it? You can't just fire everyone. You can't just trade everyone. You have to make the right decisions. And so the passion is there. And I know it's there with David and I know it's there with John Hines and all the players and the organization, now they just have to make the right moves to keep going forward, which with a year that I thought was pretty good. I like, that's an exciting team to watch. Like, let's not forget, halfway through the season, I was overwhelmed. And I know, Pete, you were too. Like, that was a fun team to watch.
Yes, very much so. And I think there was quite a bit of carryover from the 56-game schedule, where it was 28 games, and then the last 28 games, most importantly, the last 28 games, gave you feelings of hope coming into this year. But you did not know with an 82-game schedule how it would come off. And as David and Coach Hines both pointed out this morning, they said really it was the last 20 games that gave them pause.
Yeah.
And just to add to that, Chase, I remember being a rookie coming in, playing an 82-game schedule. It is exhausting. And you're looking at Tanner Jeannot, a physical hard game, Yakov Trenin. Like, you're playing with men all of a sudden, and it's exhausting. It's a hard, long fight your first year. As you get older, you learn how to manage it better, but it's exhausting. Tomasino, Tolvanen, Carrier, Fabro, these guys are learning to deal with a long 82-game schedule. That was their first taste, really, of getting that schedule. And so there's a learning curve that goes with that. And I think that they do deserve a little bit of grace in saying, okay, that's your first time going through. How are we going to be better? And David Poile even used it 1 or 2% better. You know, like, everyone's got to get better. And they hope that they can be, you know, 10 or 20% better. But you have to build off that. And you do. You learn how to handle that. The first year is a monster. It's tough to handle. And you have to learn how to go through that the next year.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And you have a replica of a trophy sitting behind you that is known as the hardest trophy in sports to win. And you went through it. You know what it's like. You hurt your shoulder during that and know how beat up you get. So
it's a grind.
There is a grind for sure. So we will talk to John Hines, the head coach of the Nashville Predators. It was announced today that he and his entire coaching staff have received 2-year contract extensions. So he will be back next season for sure. We'll talk to him when we come back here on the Predators Season Recap Show, ESPN 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Back here on ESPN 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Checked out that new signal here for the Predators Season Recap Show. Chase McCabe, Pete Weber, Hal Gill here with you. We talked to David Poile earlier to start the show. Let's say hello to the head coach, John Hines, who is on the line with us. It was announced today, John, that you and your coaching staff, you're going to be back, 2-year contract extensions. Congratulations on that, and thanks for doing this tonight.
Well, thanks, Chase. I appreciate that, and it's good to be with Hal and Pete here tonight. And, I'm really excited for our coaching staff. I think these guys do a great job, and looking forward to moving forward with these guys and the team, and, you know, building something where we can continue to build off of what we had this year, but make some serious grounds late in the season and into playoffs.
Hal brought up a good point before we had you on of, you know, the 82-game season, and this was your first 82-game season as coach of the Nashville Predators. From your coaching staff point of view, how much did that help of as you guys continue to work together and gel together of knowing that you had the full slate to be able to do some of the things that you wanted to accomplish? And I think we saw that with that identity that you've talked about and that truly being established.
Well, it was, you know, I think it was really important for the first 82 games for numerous reasons. One, you know, Chase, as you asked about the coaching staff, I mean, these guys are really good coaches. I mean, you look at the experiences of Todd Richards, you know, Danny Heinel, Dan Lambert, Benny Van de Klok. Like, these guys have been around for a while. But just the fact that we could be together and going through the highs, the lows, the travel with no interruptions, and the ability to be in the foxhole, in the trenches with the players day in and day out, working through, celebrating the good things and working on the things that we need to be better at, and individual meetings with certain guys and the confrontations you get in as a coaching staff of how we can be better and what we can do. Like, it was the first time we were all together as a full coaching staff through the highs, the lows, and the same thing with the players, the coaching staff with the players. It was it certainly was a big factor, and I thought that, you know, the reason why we had some success, because there was some real chemistry between the groups, the coaches and the players, and coaches and coaches to players. And you know, I think it was a good foundation. It didn't end the way that we wanted it to end, but I think that there was certainly some really strong strides as far as what we're doing collectively as a group, players and coaches.
And Coach, as you came in here in January, a couple of years ago, almost 3 years ago now, you were all of a sudden thrown into a situation that no one could possibly imagine. And then the pandemic hits. I mean, you were constantly making adjustments.
Well, it was certainly, you know, it was certainly a tough time for everybody. And, you know, I think when you get into the situation, nobody expected it. But I can honestly tell you that it's not the easiest situation for a coach, but you have to adapt and try to figure out ways in whatever situation you're in, you're put in as a coach. But I think the way that the organization's run, like from David on down, just, I mean, he worked so hard to try to connect us with the players and connect us with, you know, try to stay connected as a staff through the pandemic with meetings and Zoom calls. And you could see coming in as a new coach, although it wasn't the ideal situation, but you could see the passion and the connection of the organization from John to David to us. And, you know, to me coming in a new situation, the level of connectedness and communication that he wanted and he drove was really, really important, I think, of trying to get through that stage. And then, you know, coming into our first full season regularly and with new coaching staffs and new players and turnover, that, you know, I think there's a real strong connection from in the organization that drives the success of a connected group.
Coach, I feel like you've obviously, as a coach, you want to get the best out of every player. And, you know, Forsberg and, you know, Duchesne, Yossi, Saros, all amazing years. But the younger guys, you know, we talked about it earlier in the show, 82-game season, it's a grind. And so how do you coach these guys coming into next season, looking forward? Tanner Jeannot, Yakov Trenin, Tomasino, these younger guys, Carrier, and I know we had talked to Carrier's, you know, he's not a big guy, but he plays an aggressive game. He's got a great gap and he's got to control his game. All these young guys, how do you try to teach them from this year and get them better so that they can handle the 82-game season coming up next year?
Yeah, it's a great point. You know, I think last year we talked a lot about our veteran players and top players and kind of what they needed. And really it was a two-way street, Howie. Like, we really communicated with those guys and, okay, what did you feel was good? What do you need more? This is what we see. This is what needs to be adjusted. And you work hand in hand. And I think that right. needs to continue with our top guys. Now, when you talk about the younger guys, it's really, okay, what are the lessons we learned? Right, there was lots of positives for those guys, but there was also growing pains, particularly later in the season and into the playoffs. And we kind of have those initial exit meetings with those guys of get their feedback. What did you learn? What can we help you with more? What do you need to help yourself with more? And now let's develop a plan and a communication plan to get you to be ready for not just 62 games, but 82 games. And I think for some of those guys, it was really good for, you know, not the whole 82-game schedule, but a large majority of it, they were good. So what are the steps we need to take? How do you manage your game early in the year? How do you manage your game through the year, your off days, your recovery, the changes in your lifestyle? And then what do we think we need collectively as a group? Here's what we think as coaches. What do you see as the player? How do we get you from game 62 to 82 into the playoffs to now be guys that can really impact the team to win late in the season, the hardest hockey, a playoff series? And that's the next step for us. And I have no doubt that
I think if we work together in that and everyone sticks to the plan and commits to the process, I think that these guys are going to take a step and be better for it.
We're talking to Predators head coach John Hines here on the season recap show. And David mentioned today that, you know, there would likely be a new number two goalie. From your eyes as the head coach, did Connor Ingram do enough in his playoff appearances and his appearances earlier in the year, what you saw from him in training camp, to make you feel comfortable and confident that he could be that second goalie to UC Saros?
I think Connor certainly made a statement for himself. You know, I think he's come in and he had a good training camp last year and came in and played well for us in the few games that he played early in the year. And, you know, I think he's gone down to Milwaukee and played really well and got a lot of games and has helped his team get into the playoffs. And now he's going through a playoff series, which will be, you know, they're going in the series right now where they're going to need top-end goaltending to win. So that's another evaluation for us coming up. I thought what he did for us in the playoffs was good. I thought he came in, obviously it was a blowout in game one. He came in and kind of he settled things down and made the saves that he needed to make and played an unbelievable game two. But I think, you know, Connor's certainly making a case for himself. I just think it's important for us to evaluate Connor and any other players that are out there and make sure that we pick, you know, and evaluate the player that we believe is going to give us the best chance to support Juice, but also, you know, give us the opportunity to win games in 20 to 22 to 25, whatever it is. I'm not putting myself on a number, but we need a guy to come in here and play and help us win games. And Connor certainly put himself in that conversation.
Going to be curious, isn't it, Coach, with the Admirals taking on the Wolves, a shared team from a year ago. And that was essentially what happened in the playoffs with Carolina last year. You had guys playing against each other who had been teammates earlier.
Yeah, certainly. You know, that was, I think it was a benefit probably for both organizations last year that we were together in the American League. And, but like you said, now it's kind of going head to head in a different direction. And, you know, obviously the Admirals have done a good job to earn their way to where they are now. And, Chicago is a really good team, so it's going to be an exciting series to watch.
Coach, I know, you know, contrary to everyone in the hockey world, you're a human, and you have a family, and you're moving to Nashville, and you re-up. So, can you take us through your family's thoughts? And I'm assuming they love it here in Nashville, like everyone else does. Are they happy to be here?
Yeah, you know, for sure. You know, it was a situation, Hal, where you know, we wind up moving in the pandemic, and I have, you know, like you said, you have a real life outside of hockey too, but it's what we sign up for. But at the end of the day, you know, if some girls that are in, I got three girls, and they're in the high school, middle school age, and, you know, it was a hard move in the beginning just because the pandemic was there where you didn't have normal life. Like, none of us connected. The kids couldn't connect. You're not in sports, not in school or whatnot, but it's been it's been really good the last year or so here, where they've kind of matriculated in, kind of found their footing in their schooling and their friend groups and sports, and, you know, they're certainly excited, and we're certainly excited as a family to be able to keep, you know, continue this journey of building the team to get it back to where we all want it to be, but also from a family perspective that, you know, we can settle in and enjoy Nashville. The kids have settled in, and, you know, that's a big important part of it too, but we're really excited for it as a family for sure.
John Hines is with us, and John, you and David both talked about this a little bit today too, of, you know, helping out that second line, and, you know, you obviously know what you got with Forsberg, and hopefully that gets all resolved, and Duchesne and Johansson and Granlund. But when you and David are talking about what you're looking for a second line winger, I guess at this point, what is it that you want to see other than the obvious of somebody that's going to put the puck in the back of the net?
You know, that's a great question. And I think I have the answer for you. I mean, we're looking for, we believe in our core guys. I think when you look at what those guys have done this year, I mean, they carry the load. Like, they had to produce every night. They had to be good regularly. They had to be good for 82 games. And I think now it's like, okay, how do we support them? And when you look at the way the game's played and you look at our core group of guys, is you need to get top six talent that can not just put the puck in the net, but it's the style of game that they play. Can they play in traffic? Can they play fast? Can they puck hunt? Are they consistent in their game? And they have top six, top three, top six scoring ability, offensive production. And I think when you look at the best teams is when you can play an in-your-face style, you can play fast, guys can play and produce offense under pressure. That's what we need. We need another guy like that or two guys like that can come in and support our players. And can they play in confrontational situations and produce at a top six level? If you can find those guys and target those players and understand that's what we need, it's our style, but I think it's also the style that wins in the NHL at this point in time, then we're going to take a step in the right direction.
And that's a job description, Coach, that isn't so easy to fill, is it?
Well, it's not easy to fill, but they're out there. Yep. I think you really have to do your research and you have to dig in I think find guys that can play in those situations under that type of pressure where there's no time and space, but their offensive abilities are there in those situations. I think sometimes you can get in and look at players and it's, they have high offensive numbers, but how do they produce? When do they produce? What type of games do they produce in? I think you really have to fine tune and narrow down and target the players that can play under duress in tight situations with no time and space. And if you can get those players, you're going to increase your team's ability to win.
Coach, are you watching the playoffs now?
I am. I got it on the TV now. We got a commercial break, but yes, I am for sure. How?
I always felt like watching someone kiss my wife, and I was like, I want to be there and I don't want to watch this. This is awful. But, Is there something that you take out of, or do you just watch it as a fan?
No, there's certain series, I don't want to get into that, but like there's certain teams and certain series that we'll break down now. Like it might even be tomorrow. You might watch a game and see what a particular team's doing. But no, I think you watch some of it as a fan for sure, because it's the best hockey of the year, but there's other things I think as a coach that you're looking at, certain teams, certain things, certain players that you want to see. So it's kind of a dual approach. But it's been certainly exciting to watch.
Time off, do you? You never get time off. You're always a coach watching hockey.
You know what? The best part, Al, is when it's actually over. That's when you actually realize it's almost like you feel as a coach, like when the season continues to go on, like you should be working and getting better and adapting and going through, and it's live now. But once the Stanley Cup is won, I think there's like a 3 to 4 week period where it's like, okay, it's over. Like everything's done. Let's move on to the next year. But from now on, no, it's still, you're still kind of going for sure. It's less, but you're still going.
He is John Hines, the head coach of the Nashville Predators. John, thanks so much for your time throughout the season and also tonight. We'll see you again very soon, hopefully at an announcement for another contract extension. So that would be nice. But thanks so much for doing this.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate all your guys' hard work and observations. And, we all go through a lot. And I really respect the job that you guys do and appreciate the time and effort and respect that you give me. And also, I think the team and the hard work that you guys put in is certainly appreciated by the fan base.
Thank
Absolutely.
You, Coach.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. John Hines, the head coach of the Nashville Predators, joining us. We'll come back and talk about some of those things. I thought his answer on what he looks for a second liner, I thought that was interesting. As you listen to the Predators season recap show, ESPN 102.5 and 106.3, the game. Thank you, Eli. Welcome back into the Nashville Predators season recap show. Chase McCabe, Pete Weber, Hal Gill. Here with you, and Eli, of course, did a year of play-by-play with the Nashville Predators, so always good to hear his voice. Appreciate John Hines for joining us. If you miss David Poile or John Hines, you can just go to thegamenashville.com and check those out. And I asked him that question of what he looks for in that second-line winger, and I'm going to tie this to to somebody that Preds fans don't like very much, but we're watching Tampa Bay in Florida. Corey Perry scores the lone goal of the game so far to give Tampa a 1-0 lead. It was on the power play, and he's the one that drew the penalty by being Corey Perry, just being that, you know, shift disturber, as you like to say.
Thank you for the enunciation. I appreciate it.
And yeah, it's very important. And I feel like with the identity that this team has, you know, maybe not to the extent that Perry takes it sometimes, but that's the kind of player that John Hines looks for. That's what you saw in Tanner Janot. Tanner Janot had that edge, that tenacity to him, and he could put the puck in the back of the net. And so I feel like whether that's internally with somebody coming up through the ranks or externally through free agency or trades, you're going to see some of that. And that's going to help fit this identity that they have here.
And I'm wondering if that second first round pick from last year, LaRue, might be one of those guys, maybe.
Yeah, and I wonder how far along he is.
Yeah.
In that.
Well, the thing is, you know, you're trying to find someone like Corey Perry is not a second line guy. He's playing a fourth line role, and he's doing it well. I mean, that's where you got to look at someone where they are in their career. You know, you look at Tomasino, is he a second line player? No. Will he be? Yeah. Like that's where he's trending towards going. Corey Perry was your first line, and now he's taken a role and he's done it well. It just, I think that's a hard part about the NHL is finding a guy that fits what you need. And Corey Perry is, you know, I've been more impressed, you know, obviously with Anaheim, he was a great player playing with Getzlaff, and that was a really, like, that was an amazing top line that they had. And now he's kind of, I don't want to say reinvented himself, but certainly changed the way he's playing the game and is a little bit dirty, is a little bit on the edge, gets in around the net because he's had to. And I feel like that's what you're trying to find. That's what David Poile is trying to find, those guys that you can fit into that will complement your young players that can help your group in a different role. And that's not always easy to do, I don't think. I think that's kind of a pleasant surprise when you bring in a guy, a veteran like Perry, and he does something good for your team. But yeah, you're always looking for that guy that's going to stir it up. And I think the Preds have enough of those guys. I think they have a good young crew of guys that aren't afraid to stir it up.
Hal, let me ask you this, because you played against teams that I'm sure that going into that game, you're thinking, oh, I hate playing these guys. And and that's more of a compliment because you know what kind of identity they have, whether they're going to play you hard or they're fast in like Colorado and have a lot of scoring power. From your eyes, what does need to change this offseason for the Predators to maybe not just like that overnight get to that point, but start to inch even closer to that respect factor that other teams will give them of, hey, I don't want to play these guys because it's going to be a tough, you're going to have to go and work and take your lunch pail.
Well, I do feel like John Hines, you know, he talks about identity and the way they're going to play. I think that's first and foremost. And I will use the example of the Detroit Red Wings. When you went to play against Datsyuk and Zetterberg, yeah, of course, they're great with the puck and they're so skilled. And I'd rather them have the puck and try to defend them than get the puck and have them reattack. You know, if you steal the puck, you got to keep it away from them because they would hound you and they'd be all over you. And that's what John Hines, I think he used it even in our interview, is in-your-face hockey. You want a guy that's going to play in-your-face. And that doesn't – you know, Tanner Janot running you over and smearing you into the glass is one thing. But, you know, it goes through the whole team, that tenacious in-your-face game. And so I think they have a good thing going. Now they need to have the complementary pieces that work with that. So you're looking for, you know, it's one thing to have just a pure goal scorer. It's another thing to have a guy who gets on the body and bangs, but to have both of them, those are the guys you're looking for. And they're not always, you know, I look at Braden Point as a guy that, you know, and you know, he's a guy that everyone points to is that's a reason why they're good. And you in Tampa Bay, and you have Kucherov, you have Stamkos, you have Hedman, you have all this star talent, and you have these checkers, but then you have someone that kind of does it all. And those are, I think, the pieces that John Hines is looking at trying to add to the team. And, you know, I don't think David Poile is looking for, let's get a 30 goal scorer.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what they're looking for. I think they're looking for a guy that's going to play both ways. Mikael Granlund is a guy that plays a hard game, great defensive. It kind of flies under the radar how great of a year that he had. And, he had 53 assists, I think he ended up with something like that. A great statistical, but if you look at the body of work that he did, just – workhorse in front of the net on the power play, killing penalties. Like, I think that's the identity that the Preds are looking for. So looking for more players like that.
Completely agree with you, Hal. We'll come back and get into some of the things that obviously you've heard with David Poile and John Hines, including Philip Forsberg and what is next on that for him.
Has he signed the contract?
Not yet. No, not yet. Maybe before we get out of here.
Do you have a call in, Chase? Do you have a call in?
I'm working on it. I'm trying to get a hold of George Kittle. That'll help, you know, get that going first.
Okay.
But I have a specific question on that for Hal that I think we lose sight of sometimes. We'll do that on the other side as you listen to the Predator season recap show. ESPN 102.
Well done.
Hour number two of the Predators season recap show. Chase McCabe, Hal Gill, Pete Weber here with you as we appreciate David Poile, John Hines for joining us in the first hour. Now in this hour, we're going to talk about some of the things that we have heard today, the checklists for David Poile and company and what they need to do to help continue to build this team into a Stanley Cup contender. But I think it shouldn't be lost on anybody. And Pete, you were there today. David always makes sure that we get our fact sheets.
Yes.
They get handed out. And, you know,
critical dates, of which I had many in high school.
Yes. Well done. But
that got me. Well done, Pete.
Thank you.
Team accomplishments, 8th straight playoff appearance, which is tied as the second longest active streak. That shouldn't be lost on anybody that this team was able to do that again, especially with what they were picked to do or not do, at the beginning of the season. I thought it was funny that David gave a attaboy to our own Joe Rexroad for being one of the only ones that picked the Predators to make the playoffs. But so much of this offseason is going to be centered around Philip Forsberg and whether he re-signs with the Nashville Predators or not. And I was thinking of, I didn't want to beat the dead horse, but it's obviously something that we needed to talk about. And I thought, you know, Hal has been through this kind of thing before as a player. Pete, you've seen it from your seat of throughout the league. I've seen these high profile players go through that. This and Skillsy, you know, you went through it as a player. You had teammates that went through it, and obviously the end result for Philip is going to be good. He's going to make a lot of money. He's getting married. He's going to be set, and you're eventually going to get to that point, and everything's going to be good. But does this time of going through this and the uncertainty and negotiations, and you hear things about yourself because it's a negotiation, how difficult is it to go through that simply from the human standpoint?
Yeah, Hal.
Well, we're not human. We're hockey players. It's very different. You know what? The hard part is, and I'm sure Phil is looking at it going, okay, I have opportunity in Nashville. Can he be happy with it? Of course he could be happy. He could just go sign a contract tomorrow and take less money and, you know, term, and, you know, he could find a way to make a deal. Is he going to be happy? Yes. But you only have a certain amount of as a player to play, and you have to maximize. You're in the business of you. And yeah. So, you know, I always relate it to a guy that works for Crest, and he's got a great job, and Colgate calls him and gives him more money. Like, he, all of a sudden, he's not so loyal to Crest anymore. Yeah, you know, like, I just got a deal with Colgate, and I'm going to take it because it's more money. And so, I've heard someone the other day said, you know, it's $500,000 a year. What does it really matter? Well, if on an 8-year contract, that's a lot of money. I mean, you're talking about $4 million, and you can slide it off as it's not a big deal, but it does matter. And so, as a player, you're trying to get the most money you can in a short span of time. And yes, there's a lot of things that, and the scary part is, as a player, you're looking at, this is right in front of you. It's, you can grab it. And this contract is here with Nashville, and there's the unknown. Yes, you can hear a little scuttlebutt. You can hear your agent is going to give you information about, yeah, this deal is over there, and you can go get that money. And then all of a sudden you're, whoa, you know, like, maybe it isn't the same, or maybe it's more, you know, you get in a bidding war. You don't know what that unknown is. And so it's a stressful time. And even though you say, yeah, Phil's going to be fine, he's going to be all right, he's getting married, everything's great, he's still got a huge unknown. I will say, you know, there's, I think it was Craig Smith that, what did Craig Smith sign for in Boston? $3 million?
It was, yeah, it was little north of that, but it was about that, I think.
But I think the, you know, like, the Preds would have taken Craig Smith at $3 million. I thought he was going to get over four, closer to five. I thought, yes, he was going to make more money on the open market. And you look at it and you go, oof, you know, that woof, that would, maybe he should have stayed and taken the money, you know, like, there's a lot of those unknown things that's a hard part about being a hockey player, is you have a value for yourself. Your agent is helping you out with that. The teams are ultimately talking about it, but you don't know. And so this is I think Phil's got a pretty good head on his shoulders, where he's going to go out and play hockey no matter what and let the agent deal with it. And he's going to take the best deal he can get, but it's a stressful time. And I went through that. I was in Pittsburgh. We won the cup. I wanted a 2-year deal because I wanted my family to stay in a place for 2 years. And, you know, Penguins didn't want to do it. Montreal did. And so I went to Montreal. But I certainly wasn't guaranteed a 2-year deal in the free agency. I was lucky I got it, and I took it and I ran with it. So, there's a lot of stress that goes into the summer for Phil Forsberg.
And plus now, Hal, working in this flat cap world, which makes things even more difficult to work through, yeah, smoothly.
Yeah. When you look at everyone's contract and it's played out, and you're not getting that bump that, you know, like, for a long time, it's been a $5 million bump every year. And it's like, okay, we're going to get more and more money, and there's going to be more slices of pie to go around. You start, it's a bad time to be a free agent when the league isn't making money.
Yeah. And you mentioned the cap, and Pete, and I think, David said it best today when, you know, he was asked, okay, do you have any restrictions? He said, no, you know, but he didn't view it as a time to spend to the cap because of, you know, how expensive things were. Mm-hmm. With the asking price for players. And I thought that was true. I mean, he can do what he wants to do from that standpoint, but he's doing it smartly. And that's, I don't think that's a word, but he's doing it in a smart,
intelligently,
way.
Yes.
Intelligently. There you go. But I think that is really the way to go. And it set him up for now that he's in a comfortable position to negotiate with Philip and get that done, and then still be able to do the other things that he needs to do to help improve the team.
Exactly. And that's why he wants to leave himself a little bit of flexibility there. And hopefully he would love to have the signature of Mr. Forsberg on a contract yesterday. So it's up to you, Chase, to help David along as he requested of you last hour.
I'm working on it. I got his back on that.
Guys, don't forget, you know, this kind of flies under the radar and people don't talk about it much, but roster spots are big.
Yes.
You know, like, it's not just get the guys that you want and sign them the contracts and keep it under the cap. You're looking at roster spots and younger guys coming in. You last thing you want to do is fill up roster spots that are going to block out younger players that are going to be impactful in the future. And so, you know, you only have so many spots to go around and you don't want to burn them all up. And so you have to be smart with the way you play things. I think Poile is working with Brian Poile. I think Brian Poile is on top of that, where he's trying to figure out roster spots and where everyone slots in. But that's something that also needs to be considered.
Yes.
Another thing in all of this, and I'm curious of both of your answers to this, because, you know, you've both seen the evolution of the league and, you know, what's come from lockouts and the CBA, but trade protection is a big thing in today's league. And I certainly see it from both sides. A player wants trade protection because they want to have that security. Like you, Hal, you mentioned your family and not wanting to move your family around every 2 years. Trade protection allows that you have the control to decide that, no, I don't want to go anywhere, or, okay, I'm willing to work with you. Here's some teams that I'd be willing to move through. But it hadn't always been that way. And that's a negotiating tool now that agents and in some cases general managers have, or they have to negotiate against, that we didn't see, you know, 15, 20, 25 years ago. How have you seen that change and become such a tool for both sides to use? Pete, I'll let you.
I mean, that's trade protection. Now, when I started in the league, and I'm not going to tell you the year, but it was a long, long time ago in Los Angeles, when everybody was traveling by commercial aircraft, we had a general manager that wouldn't have thought of giving out such a thing. But then again, the Players Association was not as powerful an entity then, certainly as it has become over the course of the years. But that, how would you value, let's put it this way, a no trade clause, how much more valuable does that make your contract to you?
Here's the way I look at no trade. I never had a no trade and I really didn't want one.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I would want a no trade clause is so that I could determine where I could go. You know, if the last thing you want as a player is a GM or a coach coming up to you and saying, I can't get rid of you. like no one wants to be told as a hockey player, I'm sorry, I can't get rid of you. I don't know what to do. We're going to send you down, or we're going to just get you out of the way. We'll just eat your salary and you can go in the minors. No, like that's the worst thing that could happen. So being traded, that means someone wants you on the other side, right? Like, you know, like that's, I always looked at it as a good thing that someone would be willing to trade for you. Now with a no trade clause, or a no move clause that can be waived. Then you know, hey, I want to go to Boston or I want to go to LA or whatever it is. Say, yeah, I'll let you can make a trade there. So, but I was always under the impression, and I'm kind of old school, I guess, in this regard, where I just wanted to go where people wanted me to play. And if I wasn't welcome there, then I'll take any team that will take me on, that believes in me. And I got traded a few times and, you know, it's, no one wants to get traded. No one wants to leave the team that they're with. They want to win with the team you're with, but you also, you want to go somewhere where you're wanted and you don't want to play for a team. Like I said, you have a short window of years to play. You want to play where someone appreciates you and wants you to be a part of their team.
Could you imagine to go through what Dodonov went through earlier this year?
Yeah.
I mean, that was, and for those not aware, he was traded to one of the teams that was on his no trade to list, but that is at this point in time, that's not
submitted
necessarily
too
filed
early,
with the league.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
It didn't work out. And his first game back with Vegas was against us, right? And he played well.
We were all there. He scored a goal.
All the credit to him, because as you could imagine, he was probably not too happy with the organization. You know, like, what? Really? You tried to get rid of me? But I just think the human element, and this is what makes hockey players not very good businessmen and why they have agents, is because it is emotional. You want to win for your team, and you want to play for a team that wants you to help them win. And so, you know, you don't always make the best business decisions as a player. That's why you have an agent that you go to talk to and you say, okay, where am I at? What are my options here? And what's the best way to go about this? And I think that's, you have to trust your agent. And there's a lot of agents that I think are lead their guys down the wrong path. And it's, I hate to see it. And there's a lot of parents that jump in, and we've seen that with too many guys where their parents gave them bad advice. But, you know, as a hockey player, you just want to go out and play the game. And I'm sure when we talk about Phil, he just wants to play the game, and he wants to be paid accordingly, and he wants to go and back to work, you know? And so hopefully that happens with Nashville, but if it doesn't, then he's going to go to a team that wants him. And that's what he's looking at right now.
There aren't too many guys I have seen who enjoy playing it as much as Philip obviously does.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's a very, very good point, Pete.
It's fun to watch too. Don't forget that.
Exactly. Oh,
he's an acrobat sometimes with what he can do with the puck. Coming up next, it's an area for the Predators where they probably have the best player in the league, but it's also an area that I believe David Poile is going to address coming up this offseason. We'll discuss that next as you listen to the Predators recap show here on ESPN 102.5 and 106.3, The Game. We're back here on the Predators season recap show here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Pete Weber, Hal Gill here with you. And Roman Josi is viewed, and rightfully so, as the best player, best defenseman in the league. He's likely to win the Norris Trophy, which would be his second. He is officially a finalist. But I think, guys, the defense as a whole is where David Poile is going to be looking this summer, and how he can improve that defensive core. You know, to me, Matthias Ekholm still doesn't get the credit he deserves, and his new contract is going to kick in this year. So we know that he signed that last year, but I think they have a good young player in Dante Fabro, Alex Carrier. But how can they get better specifically with that third pair? Is it currently in development in Milwaukee, or is it outside the organization? And how, you obviously played the position your entire career, and I think you were saying it during the break, you'd like to see more size when it comes to a defenseman, especially with that third pair, even though we know Mark Borowiecki is going to be back because he signed a one-year extension earlier in the year.
Yeah, I think you have a pretty good balance on the back end. I'm not upset with the way things went on the back end. I thought, obviously, Roman Josi, the best in the game. I thought playing with Fabro is, he's going to get better. He's learning. We talked about a young player playing an 82-game schedule. He's had some injuries. He's got another year to get healthy, to get bigger, stronger. Carrier is in the same boat. I think Carrier is a great skating defenseman matched up with Ekholm. I like that top four. Lazan, I love that pickup. I really do think he's a younger guy that's got room to grow, and he's got an upside, not a huge upside, but I think he can give you 5-6 minutes, but he can also jump in, and he showed that he played well as a 3 or 4 guy, and so he can jump up and fill those minutes, not long term, but he can do that. Obviously, Burrow is a huge part of their toughness, and I think that that transcends, you know, not just the job he does on the ice, but the whole mentality when you go into a game. I got Mark Borowiecki back there. I'm going to play this way, and I'm going to impose my will on the other team. So I like him. Benning is a guy, he did everything that was asked. You know, it's just whether they want to keep him around. Is he going to be a guy that you know, you stay on that? Cap comes into the play here. Is like, how much do you want to spend? If you let Benning go, where are you going to go from there? Can you get a guy that's an upgrade from that or equal to Benning? And then, again, with roster spots, you don't want to block guys out. Is Jeremy Davies, do they feel like he's ready to make the next step? Because I look at Jeremy Davies as a guy who's on his high end. Like, I don't know if he's that big defensive 5-6 pair. I think he if he's playing well, he moves up into that third or fourth pairing. And can he play those? Because I do think you need, and I always look at Calgary as a big, tough, solid defensive pair. Like that group is strong and solid. And so if you're trying to build that, then, you know, Ference, I think you brought up Ference earlier as a guy that he's not that guy. Davies isn't that guy. So you want to have a well-rounded defense, not just puck movers, although puck movers look pretty good when they're Cale Makar. It just it's tough to be Cale Makar. You know, it's tough to be Roman Josi. Those guys are few and far between. So I think you need to have some of those plugs. That's where I used to fit in, is I was one of those plugs that, you know, kill penalties, be a grunt and get the job done, play physical, play hard, but you're not looking too much for from the back end. So Benning is going to be the question. You know, long story short, I think they have a good group. Benning is going to be the question, and how do they go forward with him or without him?
And I want to see, and we sort of got deprived. We only got 13 games of Jeremy Lauzon this year. I would love to see him from the start of camp and see what he can do here, because I think he can contribute.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Pete. And I agree with both of you that he seemed to fit. So if you can see a full sample size, you know, that would be good. The other thing is, you know, you talk about you want to have your six defensemen that are going to play, but what gets lost on people is how important that seventh D man can be, that having that interchangeable guy. And I feel like that's one area where they can improve is find that, you know, whether it's for injury or, mm-hmm. you know, you just want to, you need to get heavier one night. And so you bring in that seventh D man. That's what I think is going to be interesting to see, is can you find, you know, the guy to complete the third pair, but also that swing guy that can come in and also, you know, not just play a third pair, maybe move up if you have to do that.
Yeah. That's where I think you have to look at the depth, and Jeremy Davies is a guy that I think can play a top four D role, where he's moving the puck and he's making plays, adding to the offense, can play power play. Carrier is like, you know, those guys, you're asking them to play top 4 minutes, and there's certain guys that just, you know, they're not built for that. I think Benning can give you a couple shifts. I think Borowiecki can play top four for a couple shifts, like give them 3 or 4 games, but long stretch, I think that's where you're looking at Davies to jump in into those positions. But I do think, you know, Harper, I think he had his moments, and I think he was a warrior. I just think the game is fast, and I, you know, I'm not sure where he fits in the lineup anymore. You know, that's a guy that I don't think fits in. And a big, strong, you know, he can play that role, but the new game, I think you need to be more than that. And so, you know, that's a tough one. I think salary cap is a big issue with that, is finding guys where you can put certain pegs in, and you don't want to spend that much money because you need a lot more at the top end.
Coming up next, looking at the forward position, there are three prospects in particular that I'm curious about when we go into training camp. I'm going to get these guys' thoughts. Chase McCabe, Pete Weber, Hal Gill, as you listen to the Nashville Predators season recap show on ESPN 102.5 and 106.3, The Game. We're back here on the Nashville Predators recap show, ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Pete Weber, Hal Gill here with you. If you miss any of today's show, check out thegamenashville.com. We put everything on demand there. And we've talked defense, and there's some prospects that I'm curious about, and I'm curious of Pete and Hal's thoughts on these guys. And you know, we were just talking about some of them during the break. You know, Zachary LaRue is one that's probably a couple years off, you know, from being ready, but he's been brought up. We saw him in the playoffs, but Cody Glass, who was acquired last offseason by the Vegas Golden Knights. And my thought on him from the very beginning was Vegas was in win now mode and could have cared less about developing what's next, that it was all about going and trying to win a Stanley Cup. And they came very close to doing that. It's the first time in their history that they missed the playoffs. He comes here. You can tell that there's some development that he needs. He goes to Milwaukee, has a very successful season. So I look for him to be a, you know, you talk about improving a second or a third line. He's certainly going to get an opportunity to do that. So how important is this offseason and training camp, Hal, for him?
Well, first of all, I will say, looking back on this year, I think Cody Glass is not ready to play for the Nashville Predators this year. I think they decided that early on. They said, let's send him down. And all they talked about is every day he got better. He got more confidence. He played a better game. He played a more well-rounded game. And he had gone through injuries. He's a high-end draft. He's all that. He's got all the, you know, look, he's got speed. He's got hands. He's got skill. He's got good vision. You know, game awareness. I think he's got it all. He just needed to take a step back and get his confidence and play a full season in Milwaukee. And then the Preds, I think, maybe surprised that they were as good as they were. We're like, okay, all hands on deck. Like, we're going to try to make a run at this. And so they call him up and say, okay, let's go for it. Let's see what you got. Like, if it's going to happen, like, we need it now. You know, and so I think he came up and Pete and I, like, I remember the first shift he had. Whoa, this kid can skate.
Yes.
He looked like Mike Modano on one shift. The wind was blowing through his jersey. And this kid, he's a different player. And that level of confidence that he got in the minors in Milwaukee, I think translated really well. Now, I don't think he's there. And he wasn't there. Like, he didn't produce all that much, but certainly was light years ahead of what he was when he came in. So I think, you know, if he's not there, you know, maybe he comes into training camp next year with a different level of confidence and he can build off of that. Because don't forget, you know, and I put him in the same conversation with Tomasino. Tomasino was playing fourth line, third line. He spotted up here and there, but the Preds were really patient with these guys. Tomasino in particular, like, let's let him grow his game. And Hines always talked about he's playing the right way. He's not a liability. Let's teach him not to be a liability. Like, play the right way, do the right things, and then all the skill that he has is going to come out. And so I think they challenged Tomasino to jump in. And hey, now's your chance. We're in the playoffs. Can you get it done? And I think really a lot of the young guys, including Glass and Tomasino, got into the first round of playoffs against Colorado, who's pretty darn good. And we're like, whoa, this game is fast. And so I'm hoping they look at it. And if it was me, I'd be be saying, okay, this is there's one part of the NHL. I think I got that figured out. I know what it's all about. The playoffs are a different breed. And if I want to get to the next level, I'm going to have to work harder. I'm going to have to be better, faster, stronger. You know, I'm going to have to work on some things. And so I think they got a good dose of it. It's a good learning lesson. There's a learning lesson coming up and being thrown to the wolves and saying, okay, you thought you were good. You thought you had it, but you're not there yet. What are they going to do with it now? And so training camp next year is going to be very telling. Like, how hard did they work? How much are they willing to give in the off season? And did that confidence from a full season playing for Cody Glass in Milwaukee and for Tomasino in Nashville, can they build off that? And that's the challenge.
And I'm looking to see as well, Hal, can Eli Tolvanen build on what, on a level he was beginning to approach at times this year?
I will say Eli Tolvanen is a special case where he came in and he was a shooter and he was a skilled player. And we all talked about, everyone talked about, he needs to learn the North American game, right? And like, he's more North American than most North Americans I know now. He's going in and running guys and he's blocking shots, hitting, and he's doing all that. He's got to get back to his game. Like, he's got to find that happy medium. I'm happy that he learned that game, but he's got to go back over the summer and go, okay, I'm not going to go and crush guys every time I go on a forecheck. If I want to play top 6 minutes, I got to read the play, and he's good. He's got a good mind for the game. I think he's got to back off trying to get all the hits and make the reads, make the plays, get into scoring positions, and then let that shot go. I think once he gets confidence in his shot and in his playmaking ability, then he's going to be back to where he was, but he's got that North American grind that's still there. So when he does go into a slump, he can work himself out of it. And that's, I think that's the balancing act that Eli Tolvanen has got to go through.
I'm thinking about that loose puck he picked up in the playoffs in the circle and didn't think, just reacted and shot and had a goal on it.
Boom, just quick shot.
Yeah.
Because that's what you can't get out of a typical, you know, if you talk about North American player, banging the body, getting a forecheck, all the things that Eli has done and learned and has done really well, you know, that instinct is what makes him a great player, and he's got to get back to that. And I think that's, again, part of that learning curve.
Yeah, I look at Eli Tolvanen and they're similar, but they're different at the same time. But he reminds me a little bit of Kevin Fiala. And we first saw Kevin Fiala, and you saw those flashes. And I think maybe in this case, you saw more flashes of Kevin Fiala, but it just wasn't quite there. And ultimately for him, he needed the change of scenery. He plays for Dean Evason, who coached him in Milwaukee, who was able to unlock some of that. I feel like there's some similarities there with Eli, that sometimes he thinks too much. And when he doesn't do that, that's when the ability just comes out. And so how do they try and get that out of him of, hey, man, just go out there and play. And that's what you need to do. Because I think you made a really good point, Hal, that I love the physical part too, but it's almost like he kind of forgot what his bread and butter was, and he's got to find that again.
Yeah. And to bring up Kevin Fiala, he's an amazing talent, and he had a great regular season. Did he have a point in the playoffs?
No. Well, I think no goals.
No goals, correct.
No goals.
Yeah.
Like, he was not very effective. When you play in the playoffs, sometimes you have to rely on that grind. And I think Eli is at that point where he's able to grind. He can get there. And I don't think Kevin Fiala can get to that grind. I think Kevin Fiala is an amazing talent and highlight reel in the regular season, but the game changes. And that's when you need guys to step up. So I think, you know, it's one of those things where you know, I want this player to learn this. Now he's learned it. Now he's got to just go play his game.
And real quick, guys, the one of the other prospects I was going to bring up, that I thought was intriguing this year. He played 27 games for the Nashville Predators is Tommy Novak and where, yeah. where he fits in. Now, you know, could he be one of those, you know, tweener guys that is just going to go back and forth, but I was impressed with him. I thought that he held his own, especially earlier in the year. So I'm curious of what their plans are for him moving forward.
Great question. Great question. And I think that he's going to be asked to try to prove himself from the very outset in training camp. He didn't have eye-popping numbers in Milwaukee with the 42 games that he played there, but there is something there. I think at least that's what these four eyes have seen.
Yeah. Well, no, you know what? Every time we've seen him play, I love the way he sees the ice. The question is, you know, he can make plays. He's so good on the half wall and the power play. The question is he going to ever see the power play? Mm-hmm. Is he good enough to work into a spot where he's cracking the top six and he can get on the power play? Can he play with the best players in the NHL? Can he play with Duchesne, Forsberg, Johansson, Josi? Because I think that would be his strength, is he can see the ice, he can make plays, but as a fourth line guy, you know, Tanner Jeannot is thinking, dump it in. I'm going to go and run through someone. Yakov Trenin is saying the same thing. Matthew Olivier is saying, so who do you put him with? Assuming that Tomasino can get in the top six, assuming Tolvanen gets in the top six, you know, who do you put Tommy Novak with? Can he grind it out on a fourth line? And can he play those, you know, 10 minutes where he's not asked to produce? I think he's more of a playmaker. And so I think he's more, in my mind, and I maybe he'll prove me wrong, but I think he's more of a guy that's a puck distributor in Milwaukee and can make plays. And then if someone gets injured, he can jump up and you know, with his development and getting better every year, maybe he can jump up into a top six spot and fill in for those guys. But I just don't see him as a grinder. I know John Hines spoke really highly of him defensively and reading the ice and playing a good defensive role. But I think, you know, at the NHL level, you have to either score goals or be good on the forecheck and be fast and change games. And I just don't know where Novak's game is going, you know, in that regard. Is he a checker? Is he offensive? Is he going to put points on the board, or is he going to run someone through the boards?
It's a great question for sure. Coming up next, we're going to put a bow on this Predator season and look ahead to what is to come, like we've been doing all show long, as you listen to the Nashville Predators season recap show on ESPN 102.5 and 106.3, The Game. The Predators season recap show here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Hal Gill, Pete Weber here with you tonight. And again, appreciate David Poile, the general manager, John Hines, the head coach, for joining us in the first hour as they put a bow on this season. And you know, we talked about it. Obviously, it's disappointing to lose. This team was swept for the first time in its history. But now, how do you build and move on from there? And we all know that the big piece is going to be Philip Forsberg and getting that done. Then it's addressing, you know, the defense and adding some depth to the defense, trying to figure out that second line, you know, and these prospects that can help you moving forward. But, you know, one guy I haven't really asked you guys as much about, you talked about Tomasino, you talked about Tolvanen. Now, Tanner Jeannot proved that he belonged, and he made David Poile look very smart for protecting him in the expansion draft and ultimately seeing Cal Yonkroke move on to Seattle and then later traded to the Calgary Flames. What's next for him? Because Hal, as you know, like you have a great rookie year, you've turned some heads, but now they all got tape on you. They all know your game. We saw that, I think, towards the end of the season, that the 82 games, he kind of hit that wall at times. But you also saw teams trying to trigger him to get him off the ice. So what's next in his evolution, you know, to move him into, you know, that middle six is kind of where I put him.
Yeah, I think he's first of all, can we just projection aside, you know, what can we just talk about how amazing this kid is? Like, how many hit? He had over 300 hits.
Yeah.
He led the, was he, how do you finish in fights? Was he?
I believe near the top, Hal.
Leading the league in fights as a rookie. Ever done that. Like this kid, I mean, I can't talk about every game that he played in, he made an impact, whether that was scoring goals on the forecheck, hitting guys or fighting guys, killing penalties, blocking shots. Like, it is rare to have a rookie to come in and do all that. Now, that's all the positive. Like, he should be applauded for everything he did because it's remarkable. It's nothing short of spectacular what he did. But it's a grind, man. That is hard work. And you could see the wear and tear at the end of the year. He was, and you know, I'm sure he's not the guy who, if you asked him, no, I'm fine. I'm going to go again because that's what he does. Like, right at the end of the season, I remember Goodbranson hit him.
Yeah.
Came down and smoked him. And I went, oh, no, he just got smoked. Like, that's tough. I'm like, he got up slow, but he got up slow, and he was on the track, and he went back and right heavy on the forecheck, hit Goodbranson just as hard, and then stood there and fought him. And – said a lot to me. Like, this kid doesn't have any quit. And I will say, from personal experience, my rookie year, I had to fight a bunch. It is exhausting. It's mentally, physically, it's a lot. And there was one point, I think Mark Borowiecki fought some, it was a young kid, I can't remember where he was, but he fought a kid, and you know, he had bloody, he just got, came off of getting a cut on his lip, and he went and fought this guy and asked, I think Max Herz asked him after the game, why were you fighting that guy? And he said, I didn't want him to go after Tanner Janot. I knew he wanted to fight. I didn't want him going after Tanner. And so that's the kind of respect that Mark Borowiecki has. If Mark Borowiecki has respect for you and will fight a guy so you don't have to, that means everyone in that locker room has a ton of respect for Tanner Janot. And so that says volumes to me, but it also says, hey, this guy has been working his butt off and he needs a break. And so I think next year you're going to see Tanner Janot that maybe works a little bit more trying to score goals. Maybe he doesn't get in that many fights. He goes in, finishes his check when it's the right time, but he makes plays. I think you're going to see more of a playmaker. And that's why I think you say middle six, but I say he could be a complementary piece to a top six, where I do think he has the hands, he has a mentality that he can play. He's just got a, you know, he's a rookie going out, blowing it out every game. And if he plays more of that, not top 6 minutes, but top six mentality, where I'm going to score goals, he's going to save his body. He's going to have more energy. And then, you know, down the stretch, he's going to be more of an impactful player, so that when the playoffs come around, he's that guy again. He can revert in the playoffs. He can revert to being that smash and grab guy. And that's when I think you're going to see Tanner Janot really make waves, is when he has preserved his body, played the right way. So when he goes in the playoffs, he's a guy that can turn a series around. And I think that's, you know, John Hines talked about that learning curve. That's where his learning curve should go, in my opinion. And he's got to balance that now.
He was second in the league in fighting majors this year with 14.
Huh.
Only one player had more. Mark Borowiecki had one more. Yeah.
And Burrow, and that's why Burrow fought the guy, so he could get more fights.
But that's the incentive clause.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know if this is the right stat, but I don't really care. I don't think any rookie has ever led the NHL in fighting. I think that's ever happened. So he was there, and it was a guy on his team that beat him. That says a lot about what the Preds are. So, going back to my point, the Preds were so much fun to watch this year, and they talked about how much fun they had, and that was the mentality that John Hines gave them, that we're a fight for each other. We're not just going to be a pushover. We're going to compete in every game. And that was what I enjoyed about this team all year long, is that compete for each other, that fight for each other. That's rare.
Yeah. It reminded me, and again, I don't like making comparisons, but it reminded me when this core group led by Yossi and Forsberg, Johansson, when we really started them seeing them come into their own. That was the mentality that they had, that they weren't playing for themselves. They were playing for the guy next to them, and they weren't going to take anything from anybody. And that didn't really go away necessarily, but I don't feel like we talked about it as much as we have now. And we've seen it kind of come back around and with this new core group. So could not agree with you guys anymore. We got a minute left.
Okay. I want to do one thing about rookies. Go leading ahead. In fights. Patrick Cote, rookie year, 30 majors.
Wow. There you go. The former Predator.
That was a different game.
Yes, it was. It certainly was.
That was a different game.
Okay, real quick. Two pretty big pieces of hardware. The Norris Trophy for the best defenseman. Roman Yossi is a finalist for that. The Vezina Trophy for the best goaltender. Yossi Saros is a finalist for that. How do you think it goes with both of those? Pete, I'll start with you.
I think Roman wins the Norris Trophy, and I've just heard so many people talking about Igor Shesterkin being a shoe-in for the Vezina. I don't know if I should believe them, because those aren't the people who toss the ballots in for the Vezina. That's the general managers.
I love the fact that they're both nominated for individual awards, but I look at it as a team thing.
Yeah.
Can you ask anyone on that team, would they rather have any other goalie play for him? Would you rather have another defenseman? I just think they'll take those guys hands down. What those guys did for the Preds is immeasurable. Roman Yossi, every time he's on the ice, he is the game. He is going to make something happen. And I think that speaks more. And I do think Roman's a shoo-in. I think that's an automatic, in my opinion, that he's a Norris winner. Maybe Juice doesn't win it, but that doesn't diminish the fact that he is so important to this team. And, hey, you lost to Colorado Avalanche in four games. Well, you didn't have arguably your best player in the lineup. And that says a lot. I mean, these guys, having them in the future is, I just think, I don't care about individual awards. I just think their team loves them. And as a fan, I love them. And we're lucky we get to watch them every night. Those guys just the heart and soul of this team. And they gave everything they had. Juice played way more than he had to.
Yeah.
Like, he played so many games. And then Roman Yossi, he tried to change a play as a defenseman. It's hard to change the play every time you're on the ice, and Roman did. So they're winners in my book.
No doubt about it. You guys are winners in my book. So I appreciate it. It's obviously been fun working with you guys this year, and we're going to do it again next year. It's going to be weird not having Crispy around as much, but we know he's going to be around.
Oh yes.
He's not going.
He's like a bad rash. He'll go away, but he's going to come back. You know it.
But I appreciate both of you and all your hard work on the call and on the radio side, and Hal, you doing some TV as well. we will see how this off season goes. And obviously we will be breaking all or talking about all the breaking news as it happens. But Pete, Hal, thanks so much. We'll do it again soon.
Thank you. Get on the line with JP Berry now.
Cheers, guys.
See ya for the Predators.
Go get it done.
I'm getting on the phone right now. As you've been listening to the Predators season recap show, the Constable getting it done. Stick around. NBA Eastern Conference Final coming up next here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game.